Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 860. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
Watching what could possibly be the last hockey game of the seasonal year, I suppose, since they will be back later this actual calendar year. I'm always a little bit bummed when the championship game comes and I know I will not actually watch hockey for about 3 months. So that's the kind of hockey fan I am. So watching some Vegas and Florida in the background here while recording the Stunt Granny Audio here. Not a big news week. Jeremy and I already covered, really the big news, and it was still on Raw this week, was the passing of the Iron Sheik. Jeremy and I talked about it. Do you have much connection with the Iron Sheik as far as, you know, like your fandom goes?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Iron Sheik was probably some of my earliest childhood memories. He's in there. 1983, 84, 85, not exactly in my memory banks.
Uh-oh.
But my dad was a flea market salesman, and he would come across all the old Coliseum videos that they had really the early releases. So when I'm 5, 6, 7, I'm watching the original releases, and I'm seeing Hogan and Sheik, and I'm seeing all and WrestleMania's 1 and 2 and 3, you know, after the fact, years after the fact. Really. What an incredible heel, colorful character, colorful life. One of those people, like, maybe one of the most, maybe even an underrated important figure in wrestling history, just seeing everything that happened around him.
That is all pretty wild. And I mean, because I was trying to remember it, because I don't think Jeremy and I talked about it. Which Ayatollah he was the bodyguard for? Because
wasn't the Shah of Iran? Like the famous one.
And I remember the one after that guy. I want to say that was kind of important after him, but I can't. Yeah. Anywho,
yeah, maybe it was a different. A different shot during the hostage crisis. That's incredible. He was a bodyguard. He wrestled for the country. You know, comes over to the States, and you know, comes for a time. Certainly, you know, there's an argument the most hated wrestler who ever lived. Made Hogan.
Yeah.
Basically made Sergeant Slaughter G.I. Joe. I don't have to get going after that, how big those things were for those people. And a guy who was kicking around for a while, and it's pretty crazy. The times they would bring him back. The gimmick battle royal. This happening in 2001 at WrestleMania 17.
Oh my gosh.
He is in such bad physical shape that they have to change the plans and let him win the battle royal because he can't go over the top rope. And that was in 2001. The man lived another 22 plus years. He definitely had a rough. And from that point on, his life was very rough. And we didn't know. When he became a comedic figure in the in the 2000s for his vulgar rants and got on the Howard Stern show and all that.
No.
We didn't know how much he was just being pumped full of drugs by the people who were basically managing his career at that point. We certainly didn't know about, you know, the story with his daughter being murdered and things of that nature, that his drug abuse accelerating. And so, but it was nice that he, I think, seemed to get his life together, get his family together, back together, you know, enjoyed some semblance of, you know, a second life of fame and notoriety. I mean, he was one of those people that people recognized.
Oh.
He really was. The people from that MTV Serious Main Event era. It's the era where everyone watched a little bit. The Attitude Era, they did the biggest ratings week to week, but the previous Hulkamania era, the Hulkamania era in the 80s, that's the era everyone watched a little bit. Because it was on MTV. It was on NBC and places Saturday Night Live. It was on your local station at 11 o'clock in the morning or whenever, you know. So everyone kind of, it was incredibly accessible, and the guys from that era were definitely, you know, got to be very well known. And, you know,
well,
they did get to, go ahead.
Was he in Hogan's Heroes? Was that the cartoon?
No, Rock and Wrestling? Hogan's Rock and Wrestling. He was in that.
Yeah.
He was in Cyndi Lauper's video from the song from the Goonies. It was a whole weird thing where the video was just full of wrestlers and not really about the Goonies. You remember that one?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's what happens when you hang around Captain Lou all the time.
Yeah. He was in so much of that stuff. And yeah, just a... what a legend. 81 years old. You know, so...
Yeah.
Older than most of his contemporaries. Actually now leaving... I did this little bit of research. Sergeant Slaughter is now the oldest living former champion. At 74 years old, because he's just a little bit older than Bob Backlund.
Okay.
Then Hogan will be next after Backlund.
Yeah, man. I mean, Hogan's got to be
the oldest living champ. Wait, no. Flair would be in there somewhere. Flair would be after Backlund, though. Or okay. Somewhere around there, because he was champion, but it happened later. So yes. Okay, so it's Slaughter, Backlund, Flair. Maybe Flair over Backlund. I'm not 100% sure. Then Hogan. Then I think it's Bret Hart. There's your five oldest living champions left. Because Superstar Billy Graham died 2 weeks before the Iron Sheik.
Lost a couple of them. Lost a couple of the older ones. Yeah, we're really losing a lot of the wrestlers from that era. So it is. It's kind of tough to see, you know. I mean, because it's been, a few years for Dusty Rhodes?
Yeah, it's been quite a while for Dusty. It's been, going on eight this year, I think.
Okay.
Same thing for Roddy Piper, although neither of those guys ever championed in WWE. We just an entire WrestleMania story about Dusty never being. We've certainly lost some legends, and we will continue to, because that's kind of how old age works.
yes, it does. Transitioning to the modern stuff here, the Bloodline still moving along. Still an angle that would make a whole lot more sense without Roman Reigns having a championship. But with that caveat out of the way up front, we get a very good promo between Jey Uso and Paul Heyman on SmackDown on Friday.
Yes, we did. It was an interesting promo. Setting up the various, interactions throughout the night and the various dynamics at play here. Paul seemingly was able to successfully manipulate Jay into Paul's attempt to pacify him with the U.S. Championship, but then later in the night tells him that if he comes back home, Paul needs to get the boot out. Then later in the night we had the match with Jay and Austin Theory. Solo gets involved, Jimmy gets involved. Pretty Deadly gets involved.
Oh yeah.
And in the midst of all the chaos, Jimmy ends up accidentally super kicking Jay, costing Jay the United States Championship. And unlike we were promised all week, we did not get any final decision from 1J and so on by the end of this episode of SmackDown.
I believe, weren't they trying to sell that it was going to be this week now, this week that we are now recording in?
Roman Reigns is going to be on the show, but that won't be this week. I think they're gonna play up the ambiguity with Jay through Money in the Bank now, and then that's when he has to make his choice. And I think we know where this is heading, and what his choice is going to be. And then, does this lead to the champion being in a tag match at SummerSlam?
It is fully conceivable that happens.
Yeah, it's just a weird situation. Once again, one that would not be that weird if Cody had just won at WrestleMania.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. The more and more they dig into this story, the more and more that outcome seems to have really been changed at WrestleMania.
I mean, I know the people who defend that decision are saying, wow, look, WWE is still selling out all over the place. Business is still strong. Crowds are still hot for Cody and everything. Like, you know what? WCW was still doing good crowds and good pay-per-view numbers into early 1999. It's not the one mistake. It can be all the mistakes combined. But when you do what you did here, I know we've talked about it ad nauseum, but it's with where they were heading after WrestleMania, with the plan being for Roman to be in a tag match in Saudi, with the plan being for Roman to obviously either at Money in the Bank or SummerSlam be in a tag match again, he never needed to keep the title.
No.
Now, the one argument, and I made the argument that the heel situation in WWE is kind of poor.
One might say dire.
it is a dire situation. So yeah, so having a babyface champion, but we already have that with Seth, and Seth is kicking off his title reign by feuding with the Judgment Day, who never win anything anyway.
And honestly, what did he?
Other than Rhea.
He just got a win, because did he fight The Miz?
Seth fought Priest last week.
Oh.
Then he's going to do another open challenge next week. Then the night after that, he's going to the Performance Center to defend the title against Bron Breakker in front of 300 people. Really trying to get this workhorse thing over, and I just feel like, and I still like Seth, and obviously the sing along is still crazy over.
Oh, yeah.
But he's trying, he's just trying too hard. It doesn't come off like he is just being a fighting champion. It just comes off that he's just jealous of Roman Reigns. And once again, this whole title situation feeling so secondary. is still a major problem.
Especially when they're out there unifying other championships.
Well, yeah, well, that's fine.
It is
NXT
fine.
Really, but... NXT just did not need a tag team. Although they have the biggest women's division in all of wrestling, basically, somehow. Let's make this aside. Some of those women from NXT need to start coming up. Cora Jade, Roxanne, Perez, those ladies, I don't think that they have anything. You know, Tiffany and Thea Hale still need some work. Thea Hale needs a lot of work, for example. But Cora Jade could come onto the main roster and slip right into the third woman position in Damage Control, and it would work. Roxanne could be a strong baby face. And then there's probably some others: JC Jane, Gigi Dolan. Some of these, it's time for some of those women to come up, because there's no reason for NXT to have that many women on their roster.
Well, yeah, and the women just need any type of a depth chart. You know, like, there is just not really anything between the Becky Lynches and the, just some of the ladies that you just mentioned. Yeah, you know, because there's, who am I thinking? Oh, like Chelsea Green. It's just like, I know you're not winning anything. Like, her and, are her and Sonya together now?
Yes, they've been together, yes.
Yeah, so I think they make a fairly good pair. They don't really have anywhere to exist. Like, they need, you need other bodies like those from NXT to help fill out the roster. And I guess I wasn't surprised that, two teams got called up from NXT to the main roster?
Yeah.
Like, that was just necessary to have a women's division on the main roster.
Yeah, and I think, more call-ups need to be made. And NXT doesn't need that expansive of a women's division. And so women who are ready, who don't need the 101 level training, should probably move up to graduate school and sink or swim.
I think most of them are in a pretty good position to at least, be decent, know? So, that would be a good way to go there. To get even more women on the main roster. That would be a nice thing. But
speaking of women and women on the main roster, this week the return of one Charlotte Flair to immediately challenge for the women's championship.
I will say. As we were talking about the Dyer heel situation, I would not be opposed if somehow this makes Bianca Belair a heel. She certainly seemed pretty fired up about the situation.
She can be, but I think Charlotte should just quickly move to a heel role. What I would like to see, actually, is for Charlotte and Bianca to actually feud in a non-title feud, because Charlotte never gets involved in non-title feuds. And no matter how long she goes away, it's just so repetitive that she immediately gets to come back and be in the title picture. And while she'll flirt with the title picture, we can move Bianca and Charlotte into a feud. And then maybe go with, say, Io Sky to challenge Asuka.
Yeah, I mean, because what? Both the damage controls on SmackDown, correct?
Yes, they're both on SmackDown, and they're both in Money in the Bank, and it'll be
Yeah.
interesting to see if the dynamic there, if as we get closer to the match, maybe Bayley will start thinking that Io should just, let her have the briefcase, and how he'll respond to that.
yeah, I feel like that is a strong possibility of something like that happening.
Charlotte's return, you felt it probably soon, but the decision to go with Asuka as champion is a weird one. If Charlotte was coming back this soon, because then because all Bianca had to do was beat Asuka, and then they could move into the Bianca Charlotte feud, which they really haven't done before.
Yeah, one of the few Charlotte feuds that has not been done before. And yeah, you would have thought you would have wanted that for the championship. It would
Yeah,
this is almost a
I could
reversed
be wrong.
Roman Reigns situation here.
I mean, this would be far from the first time that Charlotte has cut the legs off from under Asuka, from under an Asuka push. If she were to just win a title.
Well, yeah, and that is something that definitely crossed my mind as soon as she came out.
I believe it's happened at least twice before, maybe three times.
It's just like, oh my God, is this really gonna happen again? I mean, yeah, I hope that for a change, Asuka, yeah, does get to hold onto her belt for a little while.
They could absolutely run a triple threat with Charlotte, Asuka, and Bianca, and that would probably be, fine for SummerSlam.
Oh, yes. And that is a strong possibility of that happening, I would think.
Yes.
Just because they definitely kept Bianca involved in that whole, because I'm trying to think. Oh yeah, is it just called the WWE Women's Championship? The one that they gave to Asuka?
Yeah, I completely missed the segment with Rhea on Raw. What are they calling her new title? So that's different somehow.
Oh, why do they not have that in the headline? I need to take a look. I can't believe they didn't have it in the Cliff Notes at the top here. Yeah, Adam Pearce presented the Women's World Championship to Rhea Ripley.
I love the semantics with these names.
Yeah, I'm like, I'd almost prefer the Universal and the World Heavyweight just to draw some type of more of a distinction than they're doing right now. Like
Oh God.
this is some real baloney.
They really got a good deal on a bulk order of belts, huh?
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe Kevin and Sammy are getting new belts soon. It would make sense.
Yeah, they have seemed to be wanting to rebrand because, especially, I noticed it more with the one that they gave Rhea on Monday Night Raw. It pretty much looked like the other new championship. Except modified a little bit. And that's fine. It looks really nice. But it's definitely a similar style. So yeah, I'd be kind of surprised if they didn't kind of group everything together moving forward, like in a similar design style. Because they seem to like to do that. And it would make sense for. Yeah, the nonsense of the two belts just really needs to go out the door if you're really just going to keep on doing this. and they're never going to get separated. Like, it's just silly talk. So, the semantics of the women's championships is pretty silly. And, so is Charlotte Flair already getting a championship here. Championship shot. Trying to think of the... Yeah, it's... I guess in general, I know that you kind of mentioned it. The Money in the Bank qualifying matches on the men's side has been, how do you say, underwhelming?
Yeah, from a star power standpoint, it's underwhelming. Now, over the last year, decade or so, to be fair, they have been, they sell it as its own pay-per-view, they've been loading up these matches with a lot of star power. And there's an argument that, you know, Money in the Bank obviously should be used to make someone who's never been there before.
Yeah, I mean, that was the theory for quite some time.
Yeah. But even going back to the first one, like, Jericho was in the match, Kane was in the match, you know, Edge was a guy on the come up, but he'd also been a star in the company for, you know, about 7 years at that point too. And it's, you know, this lineup is just rough. I guess of the announced lineup at this point, you know, LA Knight might be the favorite, followed by Priest, I guess, as far as who's actually in any way over or getting a push.
You know, one guy,
not Nakamura, but you know, it ain't gonna be him.
Yeah, I don't. I don't see him getting a second. Because it would be a second Money in the Bank for him, right? He just won the Rumble.
He just won the Royal Rumble. He's never been Money in the Bank. He's been like one or two of these matches. I mean, ladder matches, really, because he's not that kind of guy. It's actually not really his style.
Yeah, he's a sneaky ground guy in some ways.
He's gonna sneak in his naps during this match. he's gonna take one bump of some sort, and he's just gonna be gone for like 5 minutes at a time.
Yes, he would be on the list of most likely to take, as I coined it many years ago, the Edge coffee break.
Oh yeah, he should absolutely. Now, an interesting potential twist, I guess. They have announced that that Monday Night on Raw, Logan Paul will be joining for the first time since WrestleMania, and oh, the possibility that they put him in Money in the Bank and he wins. I need it.
I'll go with that one. That would be something else if they decided to do that. You know, it plays perfectly into the gimmick.
Yeah, it absolutely would.
And a lot of people would probably hate it. And that's where you're just like, yeah, it sounds like such a great idea. I was gonna say, like, that is intriguing. One person who is officially announced for the match that he hasn't been getting much of a push, but it would be kind of interesting. I feel like Santos Escobar is one of those guys that has the potential to be able to pull it off, but I think it's still a little early in his run to do that.
Might be a little early. I think he could put in a good performance in this thing, though. He was in one or two of those NXT ladder matches and did well, if I remember correctly, right?
Yeah.
But once again, so much of those car crash matches, you know, blend together and they're not very memorable, which, you know, crazy, but, you know, it's almost like those type of matches blend together, and if you see like a really good wrestling match, that one, that you'll remember. Nowadays, when it used to be the other way around.
Yeah, it's funny what age does to you sometimes.
Escobar is he might be in there because I felt for a while that this LWO thing is going to be a short-term deal. You know, sell some shirts, but at the end of the day, Escobar and company are going to turn against Rey.
It's really seemed like the story the whole time along, but you couldn't really do it with Dominic around.
Yeah.
Of course, really, Dominic has Rey by the short and fuzzies the moment the LWO turns on him, too. Even your adopted family turned on you, man. Like, oh my gosh. Like, poor Rey just will have to retire in shame at that point.
Yeah.
He will not be able to take the verbal abuse from his son.
No. We could definitely get back to Escobar as your smooth-talking, suave-dressing, cartel heel, basically. Cartel boss heel. I think he'll get back to that. But I don't think he'll win. They'll put up a good showing. If there's anyone who's announced, it probably will be LA Knight.
Oh.
But once again, I'm thinking there's a reason they're bringing Logan Paul back before Money in the Bank, and not just waiting until after Money in the Bank to set him up for something for SummerSlam.
I guess we know that Paul signed a new contract. We don't, it's another one of those, hey, you don't know how many dates. And the man's done well, and I'm always for it. He has definitely delivered with any of his promos and with his ring work. And it's just like, okay, like if I'm going to enjoy it, let's go for this. There's no reason not for that to happen. And it seems like a good time because I don't know. I mean, he already had a feud with Seth, didn't he?
He already had a feud with Seth. He lost him at WrestleMania. So yeah. He has a reason to want to cash in on him.
And then that works too. Where you can get some inheritance. Because, I mean, either way, since he lost to Roman Reigns, too, he could want to take down the big record, which would be something else, too.
I don't think that's where they're going. With Logan Paul as World Heavyweight Champion.
That would be something else.
And I gotta go to a wedding that day. So I can't watch
it live. Oh well, yeah. I guess I still don't think I'm gonna be watching Money in the Bank live. So
what? Not at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday, a 4th of July weekend.
Yeah, that Saturday is jam packed. Have a wedding that day, actually.
Yeah, same.
And that's at 4 o'clock. So, I mean, I suppose I can maybe fit in the first half hour.
Maybe we can fit an hour, a half hour, hour, but yeah, I might as well.
But no.
Watch it on Sunday.
I am not going to watch it then. It could be funny. Well, I'm not going to go there.
I'm just gonna put my phone away and try not to get spoiled.
that part will not be a problem for me. Because I know that no one else at that wedding is going to be concerned about any wrestling events. I guess another wrestling event that is going to be popping up here this coming Saturday, since there is not any, big WWE things, I figured I may as well ask you, what are your chances of watching AEW Collision on Saturday?
Honestly, they're pretty good. I end up having dinner plans, but those might also end up being on Sunday. But I don't. I most likely will be in front of the TV.
I'm in the same boat. Like, I do feel like, I mean, we've talked about enjoying the Saturday pay-per-views for the WWE, and I think I know Jeremy and I have too, where we're not really doing a whole lot most Saturday evenings. So it's a perfectly fine time frame to find time to watch it. And I don't think we have anything, because I don't think we have a soccer game this weekend. So there is a pretty strong possibility that I end up watching that this coming weekend myself.
Yeah, no, it should be very interesting. The return of CM Punk and the CM Punk FTR versus Jay White and Juice Robinson and Samoa Joe six-man tag. And the most interesting part is how they work this show. Because they're promising all these people who were basically excommunicated from AEW months ago are going to be on this show. And almost nobody who was a regular on Dynamite is going to be on this show. So it's like you're beginning a whole new universe here unto itself.
Yeah, that's kind of a situation. I feel like I saw a promo for it, and I still only saw they're like, oh, these people have been coming into Tony Khan's office, and I'm like, no, you're just showing Miro and Thunder Rosa again. Like, that's only two people.
Yeah.
Is there a bigger name list out there that I may not have seen that is
Well,
supposedly on?
Miro, Thunder Rosa, Andrade has been shown in the videos. Scorpio Sky has been.
Huh.
I think maybe House of Black is going to be featured on this show more. Trying to think who else. They've used Samoa Joe, although Samoa Joe is
Oh.
also the Ring of Honor TV champion, which is possibly why they didn't go with a singles match with Punk and Joe, so that the Ring of Honor TV champion didn't do a non-title job on AEW TV.
it could be a smart one.
Yeah, so then you got. Yeah, so it's. I figured maybe there has to be some. There has to be some crossover. You gotta imagine, because again, you're just creating a whole new universe out of nothing with a smaller roster. I don't
That,
know if that works.
yeah, that fills as much time as the other show. And I don't know,
Yeah.
as many people as there were that got excommunicated, I don't think they have that many people. You know, like.
Yeah, it's definitely gonna be. I do want to see how they do this. And again, it's 2 hours of Saturday Night Wrestling in prime time. That's never been done before. The WCW show was on. Saturday Night was on from 6:05 to 8:05. It was designed so that you watch it before you go out at night, or before you go watch something else. Because the only people really watching TV on Saturday nights anymore. Are already watching, major sports. Whatever major sport is on. And AEW's gonna have that competition, and then the competition of just your fan base not being home. Or maybe for AEW's fanboy base is a bunch of dorks who are and old people like us who will be home on a Saturday night, because you get us going in the afternoon, and we just need to be home by 7.
I mean, I have extolled the virtues of day drinking, I believe, on this podcast. So that is always on my menu, which is another reason why Money in the Bank, not the best spot. Hey, that's my day drinking time. Why are you putting your pay-per-views on during my day drinking time? It is going to be interesting to see what the roster ends up looking like, because I do feel like I saw some headlines from Tony Khan that it's more of a soft roster break, and it's just like you said, at least right now, unless they are kind of lying about bringing over Elevation to main roster. And I don't, at least from the sounds of Elevation, it sounds like that was more developmental talent. And that's fine if you have that and don't necessarily want to televise it.
But now those shows are going away, and I guess ROH is going to be more used for that purpose at this point, which is fine. Although, once again, AEW having to, Tony Khan having to fully fund
two different wrestling companies, essentially.
Well, no, having to fully fund ROH and keep its, you know, kind of weak streaming service alive. Because no one wanted the wrong Ring of Honor brand on their network or streaming service, and AEW still doesn't have a streaming deal, which that will be, if they don't get that in 2024, that's a major strike against them.
Oh yeah, it seems like everyone's out there in some capacity or another.
Yeah. And
go on Fight TV, become the biggest company on Fight TV.
Oh yeah. There has to be some crossover, there has to be some give and take here. You know, are FTR going to be the only champions ever defending their belts on Collision?
I mean, I guess they, in some ways...
MJF was advertised for the early shows, but I don't know if they took him off the advertising after they were able to officially announce Punk, but, you know, we'll see.
And it would almost go against his gimmick to be in multiple cities.
Yeah, it actually would. now, speaking of people being in multiple cities... I think we brought this up last week, but if CM Punk were to be added to the card for Forbidden Door, and have that be the first time him and Kenny and probably the Young Bucks were in the same building instead of Wembley, that could spark something. I mean, I guess there's easy ways to keep them apart. Really, they never really were together for any reason or any length of time, so hopefully people can finally be professionals here.
It would be nice if everyone could.
I want the drama. I want the chaos. For my selfish desires. if this thing fell apart. This thing fell apart in 8 days. That'll be
Oh man, yeah. I think they might be able to manage. I don't know if everyone's grown up that much, but maybe they've grown up enough in the meantime here that that we can manage our way through this. Yeah, that is going to be an interesting experiment to see what goes on there. And I'm wondering too what's going to happen to my beloved Rampage. Because, you know, in some ways they almost had a template, like you were talking about House of Black being on Collision. Jade Cargill was supposed to be the main draw on Rampage, honestly. Like, she defended that championship almost nonstop on Rampage, but never on Dynamite, rarely on Dynamite, I should say. So, I feel like Rampage really going to become Sunday Night Heat with a quickness here soon.
It already was. It already was. Come on. Actually, no, the show wasn't even a thing 2 years ago, but it quickly fell off.
I'm looking at this lineup, and yep, I watched it. I guess we could do a quick little rundown of Raw here. Of significance on that show, I suppose. I believe at Money in the Bank, we are getting Dom Dom versus Cody Rhodes.
What a match. You know what? It's fine. Dominic honestly probably has the most heat of anyone in the company, and Cody might still be the top babyface, so it actually kind of works.
Right now, Dom Dom is heel Teflon at this point. Like, there's really not going to be a reason to root for this guy at all. Like, he is the slimiest of the slime balls.
And I'm going to need that moment where Brock Lesnar makes a surprise appearance to F5 Cody so Dominic can get the pin and then make, and then claim to be the number one contender. Just that.
I am here for it, and I am here for the booze because I feel like they will continue to rain down on our beloved Dom Dom if that were to happen. I'm not sure that it's going to happen, but if it does happen, I approve ahead of time. Because that would be pretty funny if, yeah, Brock F5s him and he gets the W. It would definitely give Seth someone who he can beat fairly easily, but if they feel like stretching it out to pay-per-view, yeah, old Dominic
Oh,
will.
main event SummerSlam. Not SummerSlam.
Yeah.
Oh, Seth does beat Dominic, but then gets cashed in on by Logan Paul. Oh my God. Give it all to me.
just rooting for the chaos over there. I don't blame you. So yeah, that was definitely a thing that that happened on Raw and should be it should be a pretty fun match. I feel like Dominic has somewhat improved in the ring. I still don't expect an extremely long match out of that per se, so it will probably just serve its purpose and be enjoyable. Well, we kind of mentioned him earlier. Is there much to say about Judgment Day here? Like, just as a general whole, outside of Dom Dom.
The men, Finn and Priest, just need to stop. Other than the rare moments where they're all together, it just feels like it's two different things going on right now. And Finn and Priest is the far less interesting one. God, at least I'm glad they let Priest get a win. But of course, even that win comes at the expense of promoting the next Intercontinental title match.
Oh. Yeah, and with his buddy Finn Balor being the one getting the championship match at the pay-per-view.
Who has Finn beat recently?
I feel like there's been a win in there somewhere along the line, but I cannot recall it.
Yeah, that's again, this whole Judgment Day thing is just, yeah, it was going really well, but then it feels like since about Backlash, the loss of, well, the stuff with Bad Bunny going into Backlash, I think kept the angle hot. But
Oh,
then
yeah.
beyond Rhea and Dom Dom, I think Priest and Balor have fallen. And oh, did I was I like, cringing every time they mentioned Finn and Seth mentioned 7 years. Oh, don't remind people how long you've been running with some of the same people on top.
Yeah, that was one of those ones where I'm like, oh boy, yeah, we really have been doing this for this long, huh? Like, even though Seth has had several incarnations of himself during
Yes.
that time period, it's still, yeah, one of those ones where it's just like, oh, so the top of the card hasn't changed in 7 years, huh? Thanks for the reminder, question mark.
Yeah.
Oh man. So yeah, it does feel like every time Priest is ready to break out, something ends up derailing him. The man's been involved in several two different matches with Bad Bunny, and he's definitely in better shape than a lot of the roster, but I'm
Yeah,
almost
and but
surprised that more hasn't happened.
most of this Judgment Day angle since they kicked out Edge has it really has worked, and it really was a good thing to have on the show and get some tag matches out of it, get some singles feuds out of it. But between WrestleMania and Money in the Bank, it feels like at least when it comes to Finn and Priest, it's hit its crescendo, and
Oh.
Dominic and Rhea are almost better off on their own.
And that is the interesting thing, is they almost seem to be
I guess
putting
it might
that
have a
into the
backlash against
story a
Dominic.
little bit.
But yeah, I guess it does. Yeah, it does because it doesn't feel like Balor or Priest are really on a roll. Meanwhile.
Well, and their jealousy kind of each other and their situations, I feel like is going to end up getting in the way for the Judgment Day at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't know if they've got an idea for Priest to go heat to go face. It seems like that is the where it's going, and Balor's gonna bring Devlin into the thing, and then at that point it's just gonna be ugh. Like, first of all, you lose your big guy, you lose your enforcer, and you bring in this blockhead, literally, and he's not going to play well off of Rhea, he's not going to play well off of Dom. Maybe him and Balor can be something of a team, maybe.
Yeah, like
I mean,
it
it's
is
just kind
kind
of
of
laid out kind of coming.
interesting. Priest is kind of the bridge between Balor and the other two right now.
He really is. Again, he's coming to his own here. He's got given some spotlight as a spokesman at different times. It's again, he and then he absolutely should be rewarded for the match he had with Bad Bunny.
Oh.
And a spectacle of a match. He did a clean job to a celebrity. You really should get rewarded for those things.
Yeah, and I think that's why I kind of said what I said. Like, it seems like he should be in an even he's in a good spot, but he feels like he should be in an even better spot, quite frankly. Yeah, there's the Judgment Day stuff. I guess there's the stuff partially in with the fallout from the Bloodline stuff with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn taking on Imperium, but it's Gunther and Sugar, which
Kaiser, Ludwig
Ludwig
Kaiser.
Kaiser, yeah.
Yeah, no Giovanni Vinci this week. Completely not on the show. No clue why that was, but we got one heck of a tag team match out of it.
Yes, yeah, we did get quite the enjoyable main event here.
I mean, Kaiser's no slouch, and Gunther definitely works well off of both Kevin and Sammy. Just
Oh.
when he has two baby faces who will just let him do whatever he wants to them, that works for Gunther. Especially when those baby faces are as over as Sammy and Kevin. So you you hear the chops, you hear the people react to them. I like the match. Of course, Kaiser takes the pin. You knew that was happening when the match was announced.
Yes, it could not have been made more clear. Kevin and Sammy are on too much of a heater to go down in this type of match.
But on the subject of the tag team championships, a segment on SmackDown with all the teams from SmackDown who are vying for contention. A gauntlet match set up this week, and judging by the fact that they're the only heel team in the match, I guess Pretty Deadly is going to win it.
And that's a little bit of a problem.
Out of five. Yeah, it's too early.
Yeah.
You don't want to beat them, and I don't think they should be tag team champions yet. Now, Kevin and Sammy aren't going to be tag team champions forever. They are going to go back to their singles careers at some point.
Right.
But it still feels too early.
Yes. Yeah. They still have a really fun chemistry, and it feels like there's more room to explore the Kevin Owens freaking out too frequently for Sami Zayn's liking. You just keep on blowing your top. I mean, I feel like they're setting up for future segments with this type of stuff. So I'd be pretty shocked if they lost.
Them there's a lot more to do with them, and maybe Pretty Deadly can sustain a loss and come back later, or maybe they don't see tag team championship potential, or more just under lower card comedy for the most part. I mean, I'm not completely sold on Pretty Deadly. And other people went gaga for their act. I'm more like, it's fine, I guess.
I enjoy them quite a bit. But also, yeah, I guess I'm not sure how well they'll sell to a larger audience.
Yeah.
That part will be interesting to see, I suppose.
I think Kevin and Sammy are going to hold the belts forever, but I also don't think, and I definitely don't want any kind of a turn there. They've both been heels very recently. Let them both stay as baby faces. If you have to get one on a different show, that's fine. But they should both be faces. When the day comes, they do the tag belts.
That really shouldn't be too hard to accomplish, quite frankly. You know, there is no reason not to get that done. Anything else to talk about before talking about some beer here?
No, I think we can move on to the beer talk.
Finally getting pretty close to the recent past here. This is one of the beers that I picked up when the wife and I went to Indianapolis for our anniversary. Metazoa Brewing, double dry hopped, Hopopotamus, double dry hopped IPA. It is a standard issue IPA, 7% alcohol, and just a really solid, tasty flavor to it. It isn't overly citrusy. It isn't overly piney. It's just kind of like this nice, mellow hop flavor that is nice and light to drink. So should you find yourself in Indianapolis, Metazoa Brewing, one of the better breweries that we went to there. So I am happy to finally have put some new beers in the fridge that are actually from the last 6 months of collecting. So, that's the Bell Time beer from @DeFrango11. The other opinion was from @StuntCali. The brand is @StuntGranny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Download us at any number of locations, whether it's Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Stitcher. Have a good night, grandkids.
Later.